The theme for the evening talk is love as a vehicle for liberation. And in the talk with you this evening, I would like to explore the very profound and the very deep significance of love in your life and my life. And in a very general way, sometimes it seems that we are pulled around in this area by extremes. On the one side, in our secular consumerist culture that you and I live in and are exposed to, there's enormous emphasis on love. Music, theatre, arts, those dreadful soap operas, those lousy Hollywood movies. I've only been to three since 1990. I apologise. And in countless forms of expression, love runs through. Sometimes it's used in a rather exploitive way, sexual love. The advertising, the persuading us to buy products in a whole variety of ways. It's used sometimes in its more gross form of manipulation of feelings, the dreadful pornography industry in its manipulation of women and children. And sometimes we look at the other extreme, we think, phew, that's not very attractive either, the religious view. And sometimes in that it seems very, not always of course, controlling sometimes, repressive, patriarchal, not sensitive enough to the feelings of men and women. Problems around making love as though it's should only be to have babies. What a strange idea. All this creates for some of us a certain kind of discomfort, even though you and I can express appreciations for that which is in secular culture. There's still much to be appreciated in religious life. But somehow or other, and it's not easy, I think you and I have got to find some kind of middle ground between these two spectrums. And equally importantly, and maybe more importantly, to actually look at our life, at our experience of what love is, and to ask ourselves, you and me, some pretty deep questions about the way love is really manifesting, if it is, in our daily life. As I said, it's not that it's not talked about, it's not that it's not written about, religious books, to novels, to all those strange men and women's magazines that are around, it's all out there, but has it got power in the love? If it does, whoa, it's going to do something with our lives. When I was just standing over there, incidentally, this has got nothing to do with the subject, I have to say, but the thought arose, so I'm going to ask the question, and it's a very easy answer, you just have to put your hands up. How many of you have been to India? I'm curious. Oh my. Just as I thought, the gathering of the old India wallahs. And for those of you minority no, who haven't been, why not? All right. Okay. Just curious. All right. sometimes when we look at love and we say, well, love has to have a vehicle. It has to find a means for its expression, for its manifestation. And that can show itself in a variety of ways. And one of the ways that you and I can sense and feel love and see, well, which way is it going? How is it going in my daily life? And I just like to mention four or five of them. And I would like you, as men and women of the earth like myself, to say, well, look at myself, say, how is it showing? Where is it revealing? One of them, and the most obvious one, is to friends and family. Although it's not always so obvious with family, I must confess, but friends anyway. And there is a connection, there is a relationship, there is a communication with. And the love has a chance to move through the heart, and it moves to certain people in the family, certain friends. And I notice in myself, and possibly you do as well, that it's not that love keeps coming from us at the same level. When you and I check in with ourselves physically in our body, in our heart and mind, being human, we feel stronger love for some people and a bit less for others, and a little bit less, a little bit less, and for the others we just regret they're on the same planet. And some of them we call our loved ones. It's easy to love those who love us. One doesn't have to be a very advanced member of the species for that. The challenge is the love, and this, I'm talking about powerful love, is the love in our being powerful enough to still reveal itself, to still manifest itself with whom, those with whom we have a problem? Then the metal of the love is tested. Not with those who love us, not with those who kind and supportive and generous and hospitable and giving. Well, it's so easy to love, isn't it, then? So you and I can look into ourselves and we can, I'm sure, pick out one or two people. One or two is being terribly polite English. Probably a few more. Pick out a few people and say, with her or with him or with them, I'm having a problem. But we don't really think that. We think they are the problem. And if they would only change, I could then love them. We're all going to be dead waiting for these people we have a problem with to start loving us. What kind of love is it that says, when you're different from who you are, I'll start liking you? When you're nice to me, I'll start loving you. When you change your behavior, when you say different things, then I'll change. This isn't love. This is a miserable waiting game. What would it be for you and I to dig into ourselves and to say to ourselves, I'm going to find some love in the being somehow, some way or other, even if this other person or persons or group or nation or whoever it might be is not going to be one drop different from what they are now. Then it will require from me, firstly, I'm going to have to let go of the story I have about her and him. I'm going to have to let go of the impression. I'm going to have to let go of my history with her or him, so that my consciousness and my awareness as a passionate human being can emerge and bring some love out of me for her and him, which has a power to it because it's not related to the past. It's not related to memory. It's not related to an impression. Some areas of love, another area of love, is in the area of connecting and possibly working with people that we had some contact with. We're a school teacher, we're a therapist, we're a social worker, we're a manager in a business, we're working in a factory, we're students, we're unemployed, we're just hanging out with the neighbours, whatever. In this area too, does the love show itself? What would help to show it? And sometimes, in communication, the love that shows itself, sometimes it starts to move and manifest itself, and in its movement and in its manifestation, sometimes the love, personal love, romantic love, intimate love, gets a little extra edge. Edge to it. And sometimes, I think it's, why not? Sometimes you and I and us, we meet somebody and I'm not married, but maybe some of you are, or in a relationship or whatever, and there's love there and there's a whisper in the air. Sometimes it's more than that, we know, but I'm a polite Englishman. It's a eros in the air. And then that love, whatever that love is, it's shown itself, gets challenged. One's married, one's in a relationship, one doesn't want to be in a relationship, or whatever it might be. And then one's got to deal with the love, deal with the energy that goes with it, deal with the communication, deal with the story, deal with the incredible fantasy. And all that gets a manifestation of love with something extra. And that's going to require some awareness and vigilance. Let me give you an example. Because as I was talking, I had a story in mind. It's not an unusual one. Some of you work in offices. You have our compassion. And in working in an office, one person said to me, I'm joking, don't take all my remarks too seriously, there's great work being done in offices. And one person said to me that he'd been working in the office for some time, happily married man, kids, the full catastrophe. And there was some energy, and it came to what's called in England the Christmas party. Here in Israel you wouldn't know anything about that. You're lucky. And so it came to the Christmas party, and so it's amazing what a couple of glasses of wine will do. And the vigilance and the mindfulness and the awareness and the care and the respect and all those things began to slip away easily, as it does. And the good lady offered the good man, it's a true story, a ride home. But on the way home, she had to pass what? Her flat, her apartment. And guess what? She said, would you like to come in just for a glass of wine? Cup of tea? Whatever. He said, oh, yes. One mega mistake. behind closed doors, sitting on the sofa. All clarity, all wisdom, all awareness, all gone out the window. And you fill in the gaps. So then he went home, he told me, feeling unbelievably guilty. Do I have to say, if those of you who dropped his trousers, you get the picture. And when he arrived home, he faced his wife, had faced the kids. The following day, he told me, it was just as bad going back into the office. She felt the same. 5 minutes, I mean I wasn't there, but take it. Five or ten minutes, or half an hour, of intense pleasure, I assume. And the effect of it, days, weeks, and months. I don't say there wasn't any love there. There was love there. But not accompanied with clarity, with wisdom. Just got lost with the energy that goes with it. Anguish at home, anguish in the office. For both of them. So sometimes when we're talking of love and the potency and the force of it, still it requires from us some awareness, some observation, some attention to, because it's such a powerful thing, but in its noblest expression, it's beautiful. Maybe nothing more beautiful on this earth is the love that men and women can generate. Another expression of love is the love of creativity. And the reason that I'm just speaking to you about some areas of these loves is because I'd like yourself and myself to look into my life and say, am I really expressing love in a variety of ways in my daily life and making its manifestation a central priority? Having the opportunity to express that which I love to do. And one of the great forms of it, which we as a species have, is to explore and make itself manifest through creativity, through the real use of an imaginative awareness. And it's a great pity in our life if you and I are just working all the time, parenting all the time, doing all the time, and then arriving home at night, and then falling half dead in front of what we call the goggle box, means the TV, no energy left. Extraordinary. It's a great pity. I was just a few days ago, so I was just in as you call it, Srem, Nablus. Went there on when I come on my visit, so I went there on Monday and left on the following day, and for some meetings and talking, etc. And I was asked how many children I have, and I said one. My daughter, 24, just qualified last month as a midwife. So I turned to the women, I said, and the men, what about yourself and your homes? And it was, I think the lowest was three or four. Four or five or six, lots of children, they said, or brothers and sisters and family members. And then she said to me, one of the women said to me, why do we have more children and you in England have much fewer, one or two. And I said, I think probably in England people are working so hard, morning, noon and night, that they get home, they're totally exhausted, and they've got no energy left for lovemaking. And maybe Palestinian men have got more energy. The woman turned to her head and started speaking rapid fire in Arabic, and they were all giggling away. Anyway, sometimes in the movement of love, in the expression of love, the creative expression is beautiful. It's not the result. And I was speaking with one artist, Itamar, earlier on today, and as he said, with a painting, it is just the expression of a movement of a single line at a time. A little movement at a time. And from the being, through the arm, I'm saying this, through the hand, this movement takes place and something manifests. And when I was a monk, having spent 10 years in the East, the first instruction we received as in meditation was rather a weird looking thing. When I walked into the monastery, there were these monks, 100 of them, sitting like this, which we're all used to, these Buddha images. But the monks had their hand in the air like this, and with the hand in the air was slowly moving it down like this, and then up, and then down. I thought, what the hell are they up to? I mean, it looks so weird. But there again, life is weird, why not? So, when the explanation came, and when the practice came, I, for me, found it an eye-opener. Inner eye-opener. Do we realize how much of what is in our heart runs up through the being, runs out through the shoulder, down through the arm, out through the fingers and into this world? How much runs through? Sometimes we're in a state of confusion. What goes on with the hands? There's confusion in the mind and it's the energy flow running through and it's confusion. Or when we're feeling angry, pressure, tension inside, it's not flowing, this rifle, aggression running out through. When we're greedy, when we want something, like when I had the great privilege of being here, when was it? About a year ago, it must be. Maybe longer. So, here we are, the good meditators, and listening to some Dharma teachings. We had no idea what was going on just on the other side of the wall. And what was going on just on the other side of the wall, it was a person, or a person or two, who looked in the car windows, as people do, and thought, I want that. And a couple of cars were broken into. It wasn't that they had a love for what was in the car, it was naked desire to get it. So you can relax, just in case you're starting worrying, that we now hire a person locally for 200 shekels an evening. He doesn't give a receipt, but of course if the car's broken into, he doesn't get his 200 shekels. Anyway, no. Sometimes with what flows through us, as I say, it could be greed, anger, confusion. But what else can flow through the being, through the arm, out into the world? Generosity, creativity, love, just through the hands. Beautiful. So what if you and I were just to give a day, not too much, a day in our life, and we say, I'm just going to take notice of this little part of my anatomy. I'm just going to see what expresses through it on a single day in my life, and I'm going to take note and witness whether there is love flowing through in all forms of connection, service, touch, washing the dishes. All can let the vehicle of love move through the being. Love matters more than virtually anything else outside of liberation. When I was in Nablus, I think it's important just to relate a little bit of these visits, partly because Israeli citizens, except in uniform, are not allowed into the areas. Can't go to Shrem. You don't have the opportunity to see for yourself the harshness of this occupation. And Rauda, the home that I stayed in, who I regard, and I had the great privilege of travelling in four continents every year: Australia, North America, Europe, Israel, Palestine, India, etc. And Rauda I regard as one of the most wise and insightful and profoundly kind human beings that I know on this earth. She's a very, very special person, a Palestinian. And she was relating to me an incident that happened in her family during the time of the curfew. And her son, who had his birthday on the day I was there, without playing outside as boys like to do, and it had gone past the curfew hour, and from the areas of the where the observation post was taken, a soldier fired at her son, and it just missed him by a breadth of a hair. It just went past the eye. Just missed the boy. 9, 10 years old. I think this was last year. The boy came home. He couldn't see out of his right eye. Though the bullet hadn't hit, the force of the velocity had brushed so close that the eye had gone. And the boy wouldn't tell his mother and father, it's their only child, wouldn't tell his mother and father why he'd lost the sight in the eye. And the reason that he wouldn't tell them was because, boys being boys, he loved to be outside. He loved, naturally enough, to be outside playing. And if parents knew that the bullet had gone by, they would be so afraid and concerned for their only child, they'd keep him indoors. And that's an intolerable pressure for children, to be indoors all the time. So she went to two doctors, and they said something about, probably the nerve was cut. Something happened, damaged the nerve. We're very sorry, the boy won't see. He's lost the eye, it's blind. The mother, Rauda, went to see a homeopath. Homeopath gave a prescription, and the homeopath said to her, you have to cover up 5 or 6 hours a day the other eye, which the boy hated because that meant he couldn't see. 5 or 6 hours a day, this other eye must be covered up to force this eye to see. And in 2 months, the homeopath said, The boy will see. 2 months later, the boy was seeing with the eye. Not only is it a story of love and conviction of parents and child and doctors and so forth, but to me, when I listened to this, I was very touched. It was the boy's birthday party. We were in there sharing with the boy, beautiful child. There's something symbolic about it. Sometimes, metaphorically, we are half blind. Sometimes, you and I, we don't realize how much we have cut out of our life. Sometimes we don't realize who we have cut out of our life. And it's going to take you and I a bit of digging, you know, to see and feel and sense the passion of love and the conviction for it, and to take a real honest look. I can't live in this world, keep waiting for other people to change before I love them. I've got to find something inside of myself to make something happen. I was giving an evening talk. I've been trying to get him to come here for years. Some of you will know. Fine Dharma teacher, Jack Cornfield. Every year I said, you should come to Israel. It's your family. You should come. And he gives me these kind of half promises. Yeah. So we're giving the talk together. I don't know if any of you have been to California. It's a nightmare. So we're in the Dharma Hall there, and it's a large Dharma Hall by the Western standard. About 500 Americans can get in there, or as I said, 500 Americans and 1,000 Indians. And I know where my sympathies go. Amongst the India wallers here, you know what I mean. And the name of the area, it's a very privileged, very expensive real estate. I mean, unbelievably expensive real estate. One of the Dharma teachers is living in a flea pit for $1,500 a month. Means 1.5 rooms. And the name of the area, next to the Spirit Rock Meditation Center, is called Marin. And the elite and the privileged live in Marin. And when I first went, and I heard it, I thought it was more in. You see what I mean? More, because there's so much. It's one of the few places in the world where there are lots of people who are searching for the perfect croissant and perfect enlightenment on the same day. This is Marin. And so I said, this is an area of more in, more in, more in. And there needs to be some exploration and questioning, and I suggested that the name of the place, they should have a vote on it. Jack was I noticed he was getting a little bit more uncomfortable the more I was speaking, bless him. But there again, we're into watching our sensations. And I said it should be renamed More Out. My friends in the Dharma Hall, the ex-India Wallers, they were all having a good giggle. But some of the more in people were getting a little tight round the shoulders, you can understand. And the point I'm trying to make in all of this is that expressions of love one of the powerful forms of it is in the ability of men and women to give up, to let go, to offer, to share. And it's more powerful when it's anonymous, when it's done rather quietly. And that wonderful rabbi from Nazareth from 2,000 years ago, I forget his name. Christians like him, you know. He once said, very nice one-liner. He said, no need to tell everybody. Keep your giving of love a secret, because your Father in heaven knows. Some of you might be a little religious. Sometimes the act of giving, the act of love, the act of doing without, the act of renunciation, all of us, I mean all of us, can take a look at our life and say, here I can give, here I can share, here I can make a statement, here I can show something powerful which is called love. And sometimes, I'm sure, I know for me, and I'm sure for you, how potent it can be to do that. In my hometown once, I was running on in Totnes, it's in the west country of England, it's called, it's referred to in England as Britain's New Age capital, there, it's embarrassing. And I was running a men's group, facilitating this men's group. There were about 15 of us in the group. Never had so many hugs from men in my entire life, etc. I still prefer the opposite gender. And one evening I had a bright idea. And you know how sometimes it is? You say something, and then immediately you regret it. And this is what happened to me. I said, when we meet next, we were meeting, I think, once a week. I said, when we meet next, I want us all to come to the meeting with an item which we don't want to let go of. That we, to give up. Just to give it up. We'll give it to somebody else in the group. Something that's a little hard to give up. And as soon as I said it, I went to myself, oh, shit. Because I knew it was a certain book which I'd had for 30 years. And I thought, no, I'll give another book. No, I'll give something else away. Not this book. No, not this book. I like books, you can tell. And so the next week came, and different men brought different things, and we sat round and we exchanged what we let go of. There. And in the small act, small thing, in the act of letting go, though I thought it would feel like loss, there was actually a joy in the action. And it's like, well, just to let go. Just to be without. There was a women's group running in Totnes. And they made a similar gesture, because that's where I got the idea. Because we men don't think enough. And what they did, they said, they were more brave than we were. They said, we're going to give up a piece of jewellery. See, the men would never go that far, we know that. We're going to give up a piece of jewellery, and they went to Dartmoor, which is an area, rather remote region, about an hour away from where we live. And the intention was, in this giving up of a piece of jewellery, they were not going to give it away. They could have given it to charity, they could have sold it and given some money. The women said, we are giving this up and giving this jewellery which came from the earth back to the earth. And they engaged in a ritual and just gave it back to the earth. And a few people with their ordinary minds thought, no, they should have sold it, should have given it to somebody, poor person or whatever. Sometimes, in the originality of the act of giving up, it opens up another kind of connection. And the tradition of the middle way, the tradition of exploration, is a constant challenge. What are we prepared to give up? You know, in America, which I go to once a year, been going to for God knows how long, that, you know, these vehicles, SUVs, you know, these four-wheel drive big things that people are driving around, 52% of the vehicles in the United States, these gas-guzzling, heavy-duty cars, vehicles, 52%. They call them in the United States SUVs. And at this talk, evening talk with Jack, there were a lot of them in the car park. So, I said, SUVs stands for simply useless vehicles. SUVs. So a little bit of tension in the hall. More in, more out. Sometimes it isn't easy at every level for us to take a clear, honest look. And it's so vital, I can say with confidence, unless you and I change, we are going to eat up this earth with its resources, and we'll leave nothing because of our greed and selfishness and exploitation and violence and war and oppression. We're going to leave nothing for anybody else, for future generations. So it's not just a spiritual practice. It's not just a way of releasing love out of our being, vital and profound and liberating as it is. But it's an act of consciousness. It's an act that you and I are saying, and seeing clearly how things are. And I think with us, you and I, and especially in this region of the world, particularly in this region of the world, something has to happen as the act of love to bridge this dreadful divide between here and your neighbours. There's too much pain is being done, not only in your name, but in our name. And I mention all of that because I want us to have a sense of love which genuinely addresses the family, genuinely addresses friends, genuinely addresses strangers, genuinely addresses creativity, genuinely addresses renunciation and letting go and lifestyle, genuinely addresses economic, political situations, and say the power of love is not a confined power, it's a liberating power which can attend itself in all sorts of areas. If you and I, with awareness and interest, don't make it happen, who on earth will make it happen? And sometimes I think what has happened for us as a people, as men and women of the earth, just finally now with you, we have made a very serious error of judgment. And I think the very serious error of judgment that we have made is that we have given priority, all of us in various ways, we have given priority to security. The secure job, the secure situation, trying to have secure finances, to live in a secure place, to be in a secure nation. We have emphasized security, security, security. People, I haven't got one, but people take out these life insurance policies. Life insurance? It's an oxymoron. You know, oxymoron. It's a complete contradiction in terms. There's no life insurance. So we do all these things to try to make ourselves secure, 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 secure. The rich live behind barbed wire walls in their opulent prisons. All in the idea to be secure. All the effort to be secure is one less, every effort is less effort to really bring love out. We've got to shift the priority. We've got to ask ourselves, am I doing everything to make myself secure? Life is not secure. Period. Nobody can make it secure. It's an event. It's an event. And we're in it. And we don't know tomorrow. We don't even know tonight. You don't even know when you walk out of here if you've got a car there or not. You can't take a thing for granted. You don't even know at the moment what the man and woman in your life is doing. You don't know if you've got a job tomorrow. Life does not offer security. It would be unbelievably boring if it did anyway. And if life is not secure, it's just an event. And you say, here, I'm not going to make security my priority. I'm going to take risks. I'm going to share love. I'm going to live with passion. I'm going to dance. I'm going to renounce. I'm going to let go. I'm going to do without. I think it appeals to something rather profound and deep. And it brings something beautiful out of the human being. May all beings live with love. May all beings explore this extraordinary life. May all beings be liberated through love. Anybody got the time? How long was I rambling on for now? 9:40. Night is young. One of my mantras is, have fun and change the world. Right now, changing the world and clubbing later. Talk about clubbing. Quickly, two or three questions till 10, and then Tovana, which is a wonderful Dharma network. Dharma is Pali Sanskrit word meaning teachings and practices to wake us up, to bring awareness and consciousness to life, to live with love and passion and fun and concern. And Tovana, as quite a few of you know here in Israel, puts on these wonderful programs throughout the years, all running on donations, just on acts of love, acts of giving and generosity, and people just doing things together. And so Shaila, who was giving you the guided meditation from the United, coming here from the United States and Iran and Leela and others, just giving a retreat, and just the appreciation of people and the kindnesses, and 120 people coming, just spending a lot of time in silence and exploring things and teachings. All of this is nourishing, all done with just on trust and kindnesses and things happen this way. So Tovino has given me the information, but I'll just take a few minutes, if I may, to answer any questions or any responses or whatever. Feel free to ask, and if I can catch the voice, I'll repeat it to make sure that others of you who are listening can hear. So anything you'd like to ask or say, feel free. Yes, sir.
It's like if they're not pure, where does the feeling of purity come from? The feeling of being able to predict the future.
Mm-hmm. The question is, if life isn't secure, where does this feeling or wish or for security to come from? And with it sometimes the wish to predict the future and so on, know the future. And quite often what we notice in ourselves that underneath this desire, the wish for security, is fear. It's fear unattended to. And sometimes we have such a habit with the fear, we hardly know it's fear. We hardly feel it anymore. And this is where, as I mentioned a few moments ago, we can talk about fear till the cows come home. We can go and see our beloved psychotherapists. We can talk about it to everybody we know over a cafe latte. May not make a scrap of difference to it. Afraid yesterday, afraid today, and afraid tomorrow. Worried today, worried yesterday, and worried tomorrow. And here in Israel, dear Israelis have made an art form out of worry. It's an extraordinary pattern here. And elsewhere have got their patterns, and but I won't go into them. Sometimes we have to look and stop. It's an important thing, to stop. Catch the fear, please catch it. No matter how small it might be, catch it. Catch it before it comes out of the mouth. Catch it before it's got enough strength to hold you back and hold you up. So that you take a risk. And the risk is, it's unpredictable what the outcome is. Don't be afraid. Take a risk. If you know the heart's in the right place, therefore it's love. I'm not saying do stupid things. I'm not saying be irresponsible. I'm not saying take risks to hurt people in any way. But sometimes we are held back from saying. We are held back from doing. We are held back from taking a risk. And I'm sure you and I look at it every day. If we could just take one small risk a day, the step out of the fear, one a day, one a week, nothing too ambitious, itself would transform our life so that we're not prisoners to fear, not prisoners to worry. Yes, anyone? Unusually quiet. This is Israel. In Britain, you'd expect it. I can say these things, but because I've been coming here for 12 years, you know, I can tease and make some humour coming here. I've earned it. Yes, yes, please, yes.
What about loving our true self?
How are you?
I'm here.
Yes, hello, hello. We had a lovely, didn't we? Nice to see you.
How are you?
Bam, brilliant. Life is good. We'll have a hug later. Wonderful to see you. Oh, dear. What was the question? How? Yeah, please do, yeah.
What about loving our
true
self?
All right, nice. I knew she was going to ask a difficult question. good. Sometimes, this is an important aspect of this, there is a lot of pressure on us to do for others. We call it service. We call it acts of kindness. We call it doing. Various ways. The difficulty with this is that in the wish to do for others, the dear old mind so easily comes in. We compare ourselves with others, and we constantly have the thought, I should be doing more. Because, easily it happens, we forget our true self, our true nature. The Buddhists have a thing about self. So, the true nature of you. And therefore, love can't be limited. A limited love could easily be one leaves oneself out of it, and therefore one keeps thinking love has to keep going in all those directions that I just referred to. And sometimes if we're too much concentrating on one, let's say the family, or love of work, or creativity, could be at the expense of the others. So therefore we need some reflection here, but it's vital, as he was just pointing out to us, how important it is that it includes the whole of life, therefore oneself is a participant. What shows love for your true self? What shows love for your true nature? And some of us, more included here, find that one of the most tangible ways that I experience love for my true self is in my solitude, is in periods of time of genuine aloneness. And I say that as a father, as a grandfather, as a great privilege of being a servant of the Dharma and a servant of the Sangha. But the times of aloneness and solitude are precious for the simple reason that love has to be renewed. It's not something, because it's tied to an energy, that can just keep going out and out and out and out and out and out. It has to be renewed. How it's renewed, I don't know, and none of us know. But I do know that when, and many of you are engaged in great acts of service and love with your homes and with your families and friends and work and training and discipline and all sorts of ways, it's beautiful what you do, but we have to get renewal. And for me, what brings the renewal is times of aloneness. As much as I love being here and sharing and talking with you, do I love my aloneness? When you've all gone, heaven on earth. When you're here, heaven on earth, as long as the questions are easy. And and so sometimes just to renew the sense of aloneness. And sometimes just arriving here, just walking up and down a few minutes by myself, just to feel the aloneness, to be back in the aloneness, just to feel. And something in it, something, it's renewing. And then as the renewal, one can give what one can, share what one can, communicate what one can. It's over, it's finished, back to the aloneness. If we don't find this, we get stressed, tired, burnt out, and don't want to do any more for anybody. Aloneness is the great love of the being. Out of it comes much. Okay. In 5 minutes, it's back to aloneness. Please, you go right. So let me have a look at what Iran, the notes that Iran has given. So, tomorrow, I know you go to work on Sundays. But tomorrow you don't have to. I'm using my authority. I give everybody here a day off. And you just come here instead. It's Sunday. And I'm sure the rabbis will be very happy too. All right. So, tomorrow, the gates into the kingdom of heaven open at 9:30. And then we have a meditation at 10 o'clock. And then there are some groups. So, beloved Stephen Fulda from Clue, who's an elder brother, and just again another wonderful, I can say it because he's not here this evening, absolutely wonderful, wonderful human being, very, very precious human being. And we're all very privileged to have contact with Stephen, I would say. And others of us will be here, and Shaila and Iran and other friends. And we have groups. So instead of just people like me talking, we have some groups, and we just look into some issues and themes of life, and we're not interested in theory. We're not here to be Buddhologists. We're not here to start another religion, because the three that are here have made such a mess of things that who wants to add four? So we're trying to keep out of all of that, if you see what I mean. Anyway, I hope I don't tread on too many toes. Not too many, anyway. So we have some groups and explore some themes and topics together, because your voice, our voice, is important. We need to say, what's my experience of this? There are other areas of my life which I need to explore. Other areas of my life that I need to take risks with. How can I manifest love? Is there areas of my life to let go of? All of this is a challenge, and it's an ongoing one. And I find for myself, and some of you may as well, that it's an ongoing challenge. It's not like one can reach a point and say, well, I've let go of enough. I've finished with that. Who can say that? So, because life is going to let go of us. So if we do a lot of letting go, it's going to be a lot easier at the end. That's my view. Alright. Okay. But there's also a chance of sharing an insight and exploration together. So the whole program of the day, starting from 9:30 there, and then have a lunch break at 1 o'clock. And then in the evening time, it says that Christopher and Shai Tuvalu is an exploration of power or powerlessness of now. So, I think the timetable is put up somewhere, is it, Ivan? And so basically, the gates and doors are open all day. Just come. Hang in, It's not very interesting? Go. No problem. Tell your friends they want to come, come. And bring the kids and bring the dogs and the cats because, you know, Dharma tradition. All sentient beings are welcome here. All of them. Even Mr. Sharon. Alright. And especially. Okay. So, look at the timetable. Do come and share and spend some time together in the free spirit of things, of just to look at life. To look at it. Okay. Shalom. Namaste. Thank you for coming. And as you know, just finally, because I'm around a minute, that with the... Did I mention more about Dana and anything? This is Iran, who's the coordinator for Tovana and teaching and running classes, and lives in a little place up in the Kil region, up in the far northwestern Galilee there. And as you know, with retreats and all these things, running on the donations, it genuinely depends and relies upon your kindness and goodwill to keep these things flowing. So the acts of giving the shekels, in this case as one of the forms of giving, in a real way allow the continuity. It provides the space and the rhythm and the flow to keep going in this. And Tovana, I know, and the Middle Way, which does such beautiful work for peace and reconciliation, and the CODA, and other networks and organizations coming out of a place of love for us all. And every act that you give in whatever form, making it available, keeps the whole thing flowing along. And I think it's a lovely way to do it, because as you and I know, many things you go to, you go and see your therapist, or you go and see the lawyer, or whatever, you go to a meeting, quite often you pay at the door. And we're saying, you know, just walk in and we trust, with fingers crossed, and a few mantras to Allah. Right? But it happens. So, where are the boxes and things there?
At the gate.
At the gate. You'll fall over them. All right. Thank you for coming, and we hope to see you tomorrow, and have a good time.